This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
ما ينفعنا وانفعنا بما علمتنا وزدنا علما رب العالمين. اللهم أعنا على ذكرك وشكرك وحسن عبادتك. Allah Azza wa Jal, right, wants us to understand how to love, not only to love. And today's hadith tells us about an important part of how to love, how to regulate our love, in fact, how to regulate our emotions. So this is hadith 33. And in this hadith, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, أحبب حبيبك هونا ما عسى أن يكون بغيضك يوما ما وأبغض بغيضك هونا ما عسى أن يكون حبيبك يوما ما. He said, عليه الصلاة والسلام, love your beloved with moderation. Perhaps one day he will be someone that you hate. And hate the one that you hate with moderation, perhaps one day he'll be someone that you love. So that piece of wisdom from the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam is something that should be pondered and contemplated. Hawanamma, with moderation. And before we go directly to that, I want to revisit a point about love in general and why love needs regulation. We've all probably heard that slogan or many slogans similar to it. All you need is love, right? All you need is love. Love is the answer. Love is the solution. Love will solve everything. Like, we all just need to love each other. That's going to solve all our problems. Now, this is a generic prescription. All you need is love. It doesn't really provide detail. It doesn't help you understand how love provides a solution without details. Now, how is love is supposed to be the answer? So if I'm looking for someone to marry, and if I hear that love is the answer, that is, once I find that love, I'll find an answer to all of my questions. Now, is it possible that love of another human being, love of a wife, love of a husband, love of a child, is that supposed to have all the answers? Or problems in society? All that we need to do is love each other. It doesn't tell you how. It doesn't give you details. It doesn't caution you against types of love that actually could be destructive. It doesn't tell you what to do with negative emotions. It doesn't tell you what to do when love does not work. So as a generic prescription, as a slogan, it's very attractive, because once you say, all we need to do is love each other, who's going to disagree with you? It's a very emotional announcement and call. So no one is going to disagree with you. But when you come to details, you'll find the details are lacking, and they're lacking maybe specifically so that it can appeal to the largest number of people. But it doesn't help. It doesn't provide a real answer. And when love kind of assumes that position in a culture or in society, such as a society that we're living in, my understanding of why it assumes such a position is because we are spiritually depleted. The culture, global culture now, it was before Western. Now it had become global. The global culture that we have right now, is it materialistic or spiritual? Spiritual. So where is this, materialistic. I'm sorry, you said materialistic. Okay. So materialistic. So if it's materialistic, it's empty on the spiritual side. So what fills that gap? What's the thing that is produced in the media, in culture, to appeal to the spiritual side of a human being? Because you can't really just give materialism. Go buy and eat, then what? I'm still empty, really empty. So what is going to speak to the spirit? We present love. Love is the answer. Love will satisfy you. You just pursue love. And not only that, love on its own justifies everything on its way. As long as you feel this way, as long as you're in love, then you do whatever you want. We talked about this before. So when you say love is the answer in a culture, that's the spiritual side of that culture presented to counter the materialist side. But it's still very weak, inadequate, because love needs guidance. Love cannot be the sole answer. Love is an emotion. And when you have an ambiguous slogan or an ambiguous emotion, meaning it can go either way, love could be instructive, love could be destructive, love could be elevating, love could be demeaning. Love could help, but love also could destroy. So on its own, it's sufficient. And you understand why it's sufficient. Because you could love someone and then hate them. Is that right? You could lose that love. They could love you, but then hate you. So love didn't really help you then. Why was it lost? Why wasn't it enough as an answer? Love could be so intense, it could exhaust you until you can't take it anymore. You could love something so much, so intensely, and this is the subject of our hadith today, so intensely that you cannot continue to love it anymore, that it harms you and harms them, that it leads to your death or their death. So that type of love, which is love as raw emotion, just raw emotion, you could love something to death, to their death or to your death. You could love something to their destruction or your own destruction. You can love it the wrong way. So if you say love is the only thing I need, what if I love something the wrong way? What if I stalk someone because I love them? What if I break their marriage because I love them? What if I spy on them because I love them? What if I'm so suspicious of them because I love them? Love has not provided any answer. Love just told me I'm attracted, I can't live without them, so I'm going to do everything. And if love justifies everything, then it should justify this as well. So love needs more than that. And love needs guidance, love needs experience, and love needs, above all, Allah Azza wa Jal to tell us what love is good and what is not, and what expression of love is good and what expression is not. So emotions on their own, just the nature of emotions, that they tend to run to extreme. Right? I mean, unchecked, unregulated, they tend to run to extreme. And they also tend to become their opposites. Right? So have you had that experience when you love a food so much, you eat so much of it that you don't like it anymore? Or you eat a lot of it at one point that you say, I can't smell this anymore, I can't taste it. So why is it that you used to love it so much before, an hour ago or a month ago, and now you can't stomach it anymore? It says because too much of it became too much. So that flipped, those emotions flipped. It went from admiration or craving into, no, I had enough, I can't take it. And you probably remember, if you are kind of old enough, that you may have hated things when you were younger and now you like them, or the opposite, right? So they tend to run into emotions, and intense love can turn into intense hate. So if you're the kind of person who allows himself to experience everything with intensity, then you could visit the opposites. I love this food, I'll die for it, and then I hate this food, I cannot see it. You can run like a pendulum between those emotions. So emotions have that feature to them when they are not regulated. But as we said, we need wisdom, we need religious guidance and all. And about the extreme nature of love and hate, because that the opposites, I mean, that the opposite of the same coins, the two sides of the same coin, that's an emotion, and that's an emotion as well, and they are connected. On page 350, he says, Umar ibn al-Khattab radiallahu anhu, he said, لَا يَكُنْ حُبُّكَ كَلَفًا وَلَا بُغْضُكَ تَلَفًا. He said, let not your love be an obsession, or your hate turn into ruin. So they said, how is that? قَالَ إِذَا أَحْبَبْتَ كَلِفْتَ كَلَفَ الصَّبِيِّ. He says, if you love something, you obsess over it, or you're attached to it like a child. وَإِذَا أَبْغَطَّ أَحْبَبْتَ لِصَاحِبِكَ التَّلَفِ. And it says, if you hate, you wish that your companion would be ruined. So he's warning against extremes in love and extremes in hate. So he's saying, don't let your love be a kalaf, meaning it has that propensity, or you have that propensity to turn into a kalaf. So they asked him, what is this kalaf? He says that you treat your object of desire like a child. You obsess over it. So you think of a child that you bring him, you buy him a toy, his favorite toy. What does he do? It has his sole focus and attention. He plays with it day and night, day and night, day and night, day and night. And then what? Gets bored. Right? So the first part is kalaf, obsession, or extreme attachment. You love it to the end. He says, don't be such a person who, when you love something, you love it so much that it's the center. Everything you can think about. That's the kalaf, like a child. So those emotions are childish emotions when they're like that. And حُبُّكَ تَلَفَ. That is, بُغْضُكَ تَلَفَ. That's when you hate someone so much you want them to die. To the extreme. You're not moderate here and you're not moderate here. That immoderation is an expression of emotions that are not regulated by the Sharia, because you're not supposed to feel like that. You hate somebody so much you want the worst for them. And you love somebody so much you can't live without them. He says this is unrestrained. And we are supposed to say, or we're supposed to regulate our emotions with the Sharia. Like all of us love and hate, right? And you can experience intensity of love and intensity of hatred. That is a given. You'll feel that. But are you supposed to surrender to them so that if I love you so much, I'll disobey Allah Azza wa Jal, and if I hate you so much, I'll disobey Allah? So what has the upper hand? That's the question. What or who has the upper hand? My emotions or my religious commitment? Okay. So Allah Azza wa Jal said in the Quran, لَا يَجْرِمَنَّكُمْ شَنَآنُ قَوْمٍ عَلَىٰ أَلَّا تَعْدِلُوا اِعْدِلُوا هُوَ أَقْرَبُ لِلتَّقْوَىٰ. جزاك الله خير. He says, don't let the hatred of some people propel you not to be just. Be just, because that is closest to taqwa. So Allah Azza wa Jal recognizes, He knows that you're going to hate some people or they will hate you. They will mistreat you. But now when you are about to treat them, don't let your hatred of them dictate and guide how you're supposed to treat them. So you're not reactionary and you're not emotional, but rather you have to observe justice. Say and speak the truth, because what you want is taqwa, Allah's pleasure, and that is closer to taqwa. So Allah's love regulates your own emotions, has the upper hand, guides it. Not the other way around. I'll say or do whatever I want because that's what I feel like. So those are unchecked emotions. So a person who has iman must come first. Okay. And Allah Azza wa Jal said also in another ayah, كُونُوا قَوَّامِينَ لِلَّهِ شُهَدَاءَ بِالْقِسْطِ وَلَوْ عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِكُمْ أَوِ الْوَالِدَيْنِ وَالْأَقْرَبِينَ. Okay. Allah Azza wa Jal says, you know, stand up for Allah Azza wa Jal, or stand up for justice, witnesses for the sake of Allah Azza wa Jal, even if that witness is against your own selves or your parents or your loved ones, relatives. So Allah Azza wa Jal in that ayah is asking us to do what? Stand up for justice and for the sake of Allah Azza wa Jal, even if your own testimony, your own admission is going to be against your own self. Put Allah first. Don't favor yourself over Allah, but say, I was wrong. I was not supposed to do this. You're right. So you admit that. Why? Because you're supposed to pursue justice and supposed to love Allah Azza wa Jal more than you love yourself. But if you love yourself more, you'll justify anything. And that's more evident when you love other people. So are your parents right or wrong? So if they did something to displease Allah Azza wa Jal, you wouldn't say that they are right simply to please them, but at the same time displease Allah Azza wa Jal. Or your spouse. you're really in love with your spouse, you don't justify their mistakes. You tell them that what you said is wrong, what you did was wrong. Allah Azza wa Jal matters more. Your child. You don't cover up their mistakes, but you rather tell them this is haram because Allah Azza wa Jal said it's haram. So you don't let your love for somebody, your love for your children, ruin your relationship with Allah Azza wa Jal and guide you somewhere else. Right? So what has the other upper hands? Our personal emotions or religious piety and justice? And the reason why a person could be so obsessed when they love to the degree that it can harm them or harm the object of their love is that their heart has to be vacant, has to be empty. And so that's why that love, that human love or that worldly love can sneak into their heart and occupy such a central space. And they bring here an example, which I discuss on page 355 to 351, of Imra'atul Aziz, the wife of Al-Aziz, in Surah Yusuf, alayhi salam, that was in love or was attracted to Yusuf, alayhi salam. So Yusuf was rebuffing all of her advances. She's pursuing him and he doesn't want her. She's pursuing him, she's married, he doesn't want her. Why was she pursuing him? Allah Azza wa Jal said, قَدْ شَغَفَهَا حُبَّةً. He had filled her heart with love. She loved him to an extent that is the only thing that she could think about. That's the only thing that she wanted. The scholars have said in the tafsir, why did she reach that level of obsession with Yusuf alayhi salam? He says, because she was a disbelieving woman who did not love Allah Azza wa Jal, so her heart was empty and open for loving a human being to that extent. You follow me? Her heart was empty. So it's possible for her to love a human being to that extent that he becomes the central love of her existence. Everything that she can think about. Only the anything, everything that she wants from life is him. So it could blind her. So she doesn't care about her husband, doesn't care about her own reputation, and ultimately doesn't even care about what happened to Yusuf when she could not get him. So the heart is empty. So when you see, especially it's kind of movies thrive on that. Movies, Hollywood, Bollywood, probably Bollywood more than Hollywood, because Hollywood kind of lost that sentiment even. Right? But they kind of picture or draw life as the pursuit of the one person who could occupy that central part of your life so that you are living for them and dying for them, and worrying mostly about them, and they just fulfill you in ways that are not possible because they are not there. We say that if you are going to feel something like that, you're going to feel something like that because the heart is empty. It doesn't have Allah Azza wa Jal in it. So you're looking for someone to occupy that space. That's why you're looking. But if a person loves another like that, that they've given them the space that belongs to Allah Azza wa Jal. And that could become shirk in Allah Azza wa Jal. Because they'll do anything for their sake. They will live and die for them. That becomes, in fact, shirk in Allah Azza wa Jal. So nobody should be loved to that extent. But look, as I alluded to in the story of the wife of Al-Aziz. She loved Yusuf alayhi salam to that extent. Now, think about the story. What did she propose when she couldn't get him? When she was about to be exposed, and her husband found her alone trying to grab Yusuf alayhi salam, what did she recommend happen to Yusuf? That he goes to prison or severe punishment. She's proposing that, right? Although she loved him, or she said that she loved him, but she was willing to let go of him, right, to save herself. Punish him or put him in prison. Later on, right, when he continued to turn her down, what happened to Yusuf alayhi salam eventually? He was put in jail. He was imprisoned. The consequence of her love for him put him in prison. Right? Just to tell you that if you really trust or can rely on someone, or you shouldn't rely on someone who loves you with that intensity. Because that's destructive. If they cannot get you, what will they do to you? Destroy you. They'll turn on you with similar intensity, like, I can't live without you, but if you're not going to be mine, I'd rather see you destroyed. So they will punish you for it. So that's not a love that you should pursue. That is a love that should terrify you. Because it's, again, it's unchecked, and they don't have Allah Azza wa Jal to guide them and say, you know what? It's haram, you shouldn't be doing this. But where is haram and halal for them? That's not their main concern. So we have to have Allah Azza wa Jal as the one who tells us who to love and how to love them. Right? Now, since we're talking about extreme love or exaggerated love, let's just first make the comment before we go back to humanity. Make the comment that Allah Azza wa Jal, when loving Allah Azza wa Jal, you cannot love Allah enough. You cannot love Him too much. And that's the difference between loving Allah and loving a human being. You could love a human being way too much. Go beyond what is desirable, what is religious. Have too much of love for them. But is that possible with Allah Azza wa Jal? We say no. You cannot love Allah Azza wa Jal enough. So you can live your whole life and die, and still you haven't loved Him enough, subhanahu wa ta'ala. That's one of the reasons why some scholars have said that using the word ishq in describing Allah's love is improper. Because ishq is extreme love. Extreme, undesirable love. And he said, you cannot have that with Allah Azza wa Jal, because you cannot love Allah to an extreme, because you never love Him enough anyway. But with a human being, yes, you could love a person to an extreme, an undesirable extreme. So the love of Allah Azza wa Jal cannot be exaggerated, cannot be extreme, but you can exaggerate, or you can you can have a misguided expression of that love. Right? You could have a wrong expression of Allah's love. So if somebody says, I'm going to commit suicide because I love Allah Azza wa Jal so much, do we tell him yes? No. So there are ways where you could express that love and ways that you shouldn't express that love. So love, again, even loving Allah Azza wa Jal doesn't justify anything that is done in its name. It has to be proper expression of love. And we'll touch upon the love of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, soon. So extreme religious love. We talked about worldly love, but I want to touch on extreme religious love. Extreme religious love that is not guided, and not adhered to the bounds of the Sharia, is far more dangerous, typically, than romantic obsessive love. Romantic obsessive love, if it doesn't lead to shirk in Allah Azza wa Jal, just could ruin your life here. Right? Could ruin your life here. You could lose your life, lose your health, lose your future, possibly, right? Lose a good marriage, possibly. But it may not affect your hereafter as much. It can deprive you of good deeds, but it doesn't affect your hereafter as much. But extreme religious love, unguided, unregulated, misapplied, is dangerous. And what testifies to this on page 351 and 352, Ali ibn Abi Talib radiallahu anhu said, يَهْلَكُ فِيَّ رَجُلَانِ مُفْرِطٌ فِي حُبِّي وَمُفْرِطٌ فِي بُغْضِي. And this is Hassan to Ali ibn Abi Talib radiallahu anhu. He said, two types of people will perish when it comes to me. Those who will excessively love me and excessively hate me. So those who love me excessively will perish. And those who hate me excessively will perish. And on page 352, he said, رضي الله عنه لا يحبني قوم حتى يدخل النار في. There's some people will love me so much that they will enter hellfire because of me. ولا يبغضني قوم حتى يدخل النار في بغضي. And some people will hate me until they enter hellfire because of hating me. These are the extremes that we're talking about, right? They love me so much that it will take them where? Hell. They will perish and they will take them to hell. And they will hate me so much that it will take them to hell. So what is the example? What is he talking about? And that is here is a prediction. that must have come, wallahu a'lam, from the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, because it's futuristic. So there are people, he witnessed them, he saw them, and they're living till today, who love Ali ibn Abi Talib, or they say that they love Ali ibn Abi Talib radiallahu anhu to such an extent that they will say that he is God. Okay? Or God incarnate. Right? Or that he's infallible. These are different sects, by the way. Or that he's infallible, ma'soom. Huh? And that his children are infallible. So we'll take anything attributed to them and reject anything attributed to the rest of the companions. We elevate them to such a level that we take sharia from them and we curse the rest of the companions, or we dismiss them, or we say that they are in hellfire. So such beliefs that deviate from the Quran and Sunnah take the person where? To hell. So if a person believes that Ali is God or God incarnate, that's disbelief in Allah Azza wa Jal. So you can't say, I love him so much. Yeah, but that is a misguided, wrong type of love. You shouldn't love him that much. You shouldn't express that love that much. So that is what he is saying, radiallahu anhu, is that they will love me so much that they will say they love me, but curse the rest of the companions or say that they are in hellfire. That elevation of Ali is something that he will not approve of. So that is a path to hell. Not a path to loving him, but a path to hell. And he will disown any person who will exaggerate his praise. As it was said that Ali radiallahu anhu, when he saw people during his life in his khilafah that were telling, you are God, he sought them to burn them alive. Like he sought them to catch them and burn them alive. Because that was what? Heretical. And he says, and people will hate me so much that they will enter hellfire because of me. That also happened because some people hated Ali radiallahu anhu so much that they cursed him. They were cursing him. And they turned against him and they turned against his children, cursing them as well and hating them as well. And that is hating one of the companions of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam and cursing him outright like that is also a reason for a person to be punished. So he is saying, radiallahu anhu, see these emotions, excessive love and excessive hate, where they could take a person. And that reminds you also, or should remind you, of another person whom people loved so much that because of it, it's going to take them to hell. And they hated so much that they, because of it, it's going to take them to hell. And that is whom? That is Isa, alayhi salam, Jesus, alayhi salam. So some people love him so much that they make him what? God or the Son of God, right? And they may have these kind of emotions towards him when they hear his name, when they, you know, hear the description of his, that, you know, so-called crucifixion, they'll cry. You see them, they will be crying, right? Just like the stories of the martyrdom of al-Hussein, right? You'll see them, they will be crying. But that love, that expression, those emotions are not those that praiseworthy. Allah Azza wa Jalla knows that this is the wrong belief. So that takes a person to hell. So if you believe that Isa, Jesus, is the Son of God, and you say, well, I'll only love him, now that is the wrong type of love. Or if other people hated him so much that they called his mother this and that, and called him the son of this and that, and they called that he was a fabricator, a charlatan, and, right? And he deserved to be killed. That is hating Isa alayhi salam to an extent that takes a person to hell again. So those are the extreme emotions that the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam was talking about. So as they have applied to Isa alayhi salam, they were also applied to Ali ibn Abi Talib radiallahu anhu. Now, what's important also is to understand that the love of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam also should not run into extremes. Because some of us have done with Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam what some of the Christians have done with Isa. And it's all in the name of love. So we love the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, that there are some Muslims who will say, no, the Prophet was created from light, and that light is the substance from which all of creation came. Yani all of this universe comes from the light of Muhammad, Nur Muhammad. And the Nur Muhammad becomes almost a divine light. Right? Or that all of creation, from Adam to the last person on earth, was created for the sake of Muhammad, alayhi salatu wasalam. So what's the basis for that belief? Why were we created? To do what? For Allah's worship, right? So this creation wasn't for the sake of Muhammad, alayhi salatu wasalam. So loving the Prophet, alayhi salatu wasalam, doesn't justify any belief in the name of his love. Or any act in the name of his love. Otherwise, it would be no different than what? The Christians and many of the other sects who abuse the object of their belief in the name of loving them. There was also one point, let me see, was it here or later? Okay. And so since we're on the topic here about kind of moderating your love, and if it comes later, inshallah, it comes later, that also should be extended to loving scholars and people of knowledge, right? So if you admire someone, and you know, that category of Ahlul Ilm, Al-Mashayikh, Shuyukh, scholars, Al-Ulama, whatever, kind of has a spectrum of those people who are truly knowledgeable, truly people of knowledge, that run down all the way to popular speakers. They're not scholars, but they just happen to be people who can speak, good orators, and they have an audience. And they have some substance to what they're saying, but they're not scholars or ulama ahlul ilm. So when you watch a person like that, when you listen to a person like that, and you keep watching them, it's natural to be attached, right? And it's natural to love them. And you will love them for religious reasons, and you will love them also for personal reasons. You just listen to them all the time. You like how he looks, right? You like how he speaks. That has to do with the person more than what he says. You like the topics. He just speaks to you. There's a personal rapport between you and them. The question here, the test here, what happens if they make a mistake? Is your love greater for them or for the truth that they are saying? Is your love greater for Allah Azza wa Jal so you can say, yes, they made a mistake, they are wrong, and you could admit that? Or you would justify anything that they say because you like them, and you refuse to admit that they made a mistake. So are they now the objective or the means? Are they pointing to someone or something else? Or have they become the focus? That's celebrity worship. What is celebrity worship? Meaning that I want them. I like them. I will say whatever they say. I will do whatever they do. The question here, as it would happen with some people, what happens if they lose their faith? What if it happens if they commit a big mistake? Would you lose your faith? Because they've lost it. So if we lose our faith because he lost his faith, he lost his way, then we understand that he had become the object of our attention, not a means to Allah. He stopped pointing to Allah. Either he or we took it that way, Allahu A'lam. Instead of pointing to Allah Azza wa Jal, he is pointing to himself. Or you missed him pointing to Allah and you just focused on him. So that's the test. And that is why Allah Azza wa Jal, by the way, if you want to understand the benefit of human mistakes, is that Allah Azza wa Jal will test you at times. Are you going to follow him because it's him, or follow me? Or follow Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam? Here's the evidence. Here's the hadith. He's saying something else. Are you going to follow him or follow Prophet? That's when the love of Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam will show itself. Right? So in your heart, who is the real sheikh? Who is the real sheikh? So Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam should be the real sheikh. And everybody else is pointing to him. So that if they make a mistake, they say, okay, my main sheikh is the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. He's the one who teaches me and guides me and tells me what to do. I'll take guidance from him, not from so-and-so on YouTube. So-and-so on YouTube is only pointing to him. If he fails to point, then I don't need him. I'll see somebody else. And of course, you still respect a person, I mean, with the mistakes that they've done, you still respect them as long as the mistakes are within reason. You still respect them. But at the same time, to be honest enough and brave enough to say, that was a mistake and I will put Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam before any other human. Liberate yourself from loving someone to the extent that you'll compromise the Prophet and his teachings for their sake. Okay? So that's why love sometimes is testing. Love sometimes requires, is challenging, right? So, since love, going back to love, and this is love of human beings, the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam is telling you that when you hate too much, or when you hate, don't hate too much. And when you love, don't love too much. Because there's a possibility that your emotions will change, their emotions will change. And maybe the one that you say, I hate so much, could be a person that you will like later. Circumstances will be different. You'll find that the reason why you hate them or they hate you has disappeared. You need them and they need you. So if you allow yourself, imagine with me a scenario where you allow yourself, once you hate someone, to say everything on your mind. Everything. Or to do everything that is possible because you hate them. What happens if you need them later? Then you've ruined the possibility of any reconciliation. If you hate someone, you know how when you get in an argument with someone and it's so heated and you remove all filters and now you say everything that you ever thought about them to them. All the terrible things that you thought about, you will say that to them. Would there be a way back? And even if you want to come back, they'll always remember the things that you've said. Or worse, the things that you've done. So the Prophet ﷺ is saying, you have to understand, these emotions are not stable. When you are really angry, don't say everything and do everything, because that person that you think that you hate right now could be a dear friend later on. If you need them later, better keep some bridges unburned. Or this person that you love, and this kind of this love ranges from a spouse to a child to a parent to a friend, or what are you so-called friend? Can you love them so much that you would depend entirely on them and think that you can't live without them? Or when it comes to some friends, tell them all of your secrets. She is the best, my best friend. He and she is the best friend. So you think I can trust them. So you tell them everything. Then for whatever reason, trivial or not, they become your enemy. What do they have now? All your secrets. Knowledge of all your weaknesses. And that's not prudent. Right? You would keep and you would have to keep some things to yourself. The possibility that this friend may not continue to be a friend. So the Prophet ﷺ is telling you, love is not always, doesn't always last. It may last. But with moderation, right, it will last. But with extremes, it doesn't last. And in case it doesn't last, you must be ready for the fact that this person can turn against me, or this person could become my friend. So be moderate. Right? And you don't become or don't turn a person into the center of your existence. And a story that is interesting of how love changes, and the one that you love may not love you back, and the one that how it's all unstable, and so you cannot rely on a human being to make you happy. Right? You cannot invest in one single human being and say, he or she will make me happy. So what happens if you lose them? Okay? So Ibn Abbas, this is on page 353 and then 354. He says, Ibn Abbas, radiallahu anhu, said, he says, Barira, I'm just going to read it as he narrates it and then explain it. He says, Barira was married to a slave. And his name was Mughith. And he says, it's as if I can still see him walking behind her, crying, with his tears running down his beard. And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam standing next to Al-Abbas, the father of Abdullah. And he says, "Ya Abbas, aren't you amazed at how much Mughith loves Barira and how much Barira hates Mughith?" And then the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam said to Barira, he said, "Law raja'ti," he says, "maybe you can go back to him." And then she said, "Ta'muruni," she said, "are you commanding me to do this?" And he said, "No, innama anasha, innama ashfa." He says, "No, I'm only interceding. I'm not commanding you, I'm only interceding." قَالَتْ لَا حَاجَةَ لِي فِيهِ. She said, "I don't need him, or I don't want him." The story of Mughith and Barira is kind of like a love story, right, if you want to think about it. Both of them were slaves. Both of them were slaves. And so, Barira was freed. She became a free woman, right? So both of them were slaves, and now Barira became a free woman. As a free woman, she has an option. She could either stay or leave him. Okay? So either stay or leaves him. So what did she choose? To leave. "I don't want him anymore. I have the option now. I'm free. He's still a slave. I don't want him anymore. So I'm leaving." So the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, right, he says, witnessing this, and Mughith was still trying or pleading with her, and he's crying, and typically the image is the opposite. We would think the woman would be the one who's crying over the man, and the one is the one who doesn't care because men are not emotional, but women are emotional. Here it's the opposite. He's going after her, crying with his kind of tears, right, visible on his face. And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam is, you know, witnessing all this. And he's saying to Al-Abbas, "Isn't it amazing of how much he is attached and he loves her, and how much she doesn't?" And the only thing that the Prophet ﷺ could do is just go to her and say, "Why not you go back to him? Why don't you stay his wife?" And Barira radiallahu anha, she's a companion radiallahu anha, she wanted to differentiate between what is this intervention? Are you commanding me? Because if he's commanding her, then what? For sure, I will do it. I'll stay. But is this a command? He says, "No, I'm just trying to reconcile you both." So he says, "No, I don't want him." So subhanAllah, see how the Prophet ﷺ did not fault her for that decision. This is what you want, this is it for you. And didn't fault Mughith for loving her. Okay? He loved her, but she fell out of love, or she didn't love him, whatever it is. He could only observe and he could only intercede, but then he could pull back. That's the only thing that would be possible. Didn't condemn anyone for it. But just take this as an example of loving someone so much, but they don't love you. Right? And of course, the Sahaba radiallahu anhum, they're not like us today. They're not going to collapse if somebody leaves them. They'll find a way to cope with it. But that's how resilient we have to be. So what protects this? What makes you resilient when it comes to human love? Allah's love. Allah's love is the best substitute. Because if you love Allah Azza wa Jal, it's not possible, as we said before, it's not possible for you to depend on a human being to that extent. You can't, because you already have someone. You already have someone. Part of your heart is already occupied. If I need something, Allah gives it to me. If I'm in distress, I go back to Allah. Not if I need something, He will help me, or she will come to my aid. Because then it's obvious, if you remove this object of that you relied on, if you remove him from your life, what happens? It's devastating. You left me with nothing. But if that person leaves, but you rely on Allah Azza wa Jal, then you still have Allah Azza wa Jal, right? Another kind of small story, and there's some benefit in it, bi'idhnillah azza wa jal, on page 355. And again, it's about love and regulating your love and what takes precedence, what comes first. So Ibn Umar radiallahu anhuma said, "Kanat tahti imra'atun uhibbuha wa kana Umaru yakrahuha." He says, "I was married to a woman and I loved her, and Umar hated her." So Umar is his father. So I loved her, married already, Umar hated her. فَقَالَ لِي طَلِّقْهَا. So he told me, divorce her. فَأَبَيْتُ. I refused. فأتى عمر رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم فذكر ذلك له. So Umar went to the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم and he told him about the whole thing. فقال لي رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم طلقها. So the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم told me, divorce her. Now that needs explanation. Okay? So Umar, now you could think to yourself, why would Umar hate her? It could be for personal reasons, or it could be for religious reasons. Right? These are the two possibilities. So he says, divorce. His son says no. Why? Because he loves her. When Umar goes to the Prophet ﷺ and he explains all of this, the Prophet now intervenes and he said, divorce her. Would he be championing then Umar's personal feelings or religious feelings? Religious. Because he would not go to Umar and say, well, since you don't really like her personally, let him divorce her. Why? The son likes her, loves her, in fact. That's what he said. No, it must have been for religious reasons. And that's why the Prophet ﷺ could side with Umar. Because in the other example, remember, these were personal feelings. He didn't intervene by saying, I command you to do this. Stay with him, though you don't love him. No. But in this case, he said, no, divorce her. Because he knows, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, that when Umar hates someone or likes him for religious reason, that counts. Umar is special. Umar is not like anybody else. So he said, you listen to your father. So here, if Ibn Umar loved her to the extreme, would he listen to the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam? He wouldn't be able to. If his love was extreme, meaning he loved her more than Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam, he wouldn't be able to listen to Muhammad. Because why would I give her up for the sake of what? A lower love? You would never do that, right? As like, I don't know, you love ice cream so much, okay, instead of this ice cream, eat this healthy yogurt. Why would you, right? That is much more delicious than that one, unless you love your health more and you say, I don't want sugar, this, then maybe you will switch. But otherwise, this tastes a lot better than that. Why would I leave this for that? You will only leave something for a higher love. You could only divorce her. His wife, he said, I love her. He could only divorce her if he loved Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam more. Only then would he be able to follow. Right? So that's the competition of love. And Allah Azza wa Jalla will test us with what we love. He'll take this from you or give you something. And then we'll say, will you put Allah first or that thing that you love? Your own emotions or Allah Azza wa Jalla? If there is no clash, alhamdulillah. But whenever there's a clash, Allah Azza wa Jalla has to come first. And we take from this hadith too also. If a parent asks his child, divorce your wife, or they say to the wife, leave your husband, should they listen to them? Only if what? It's religious. Not if it's personal. You're already married. It's not before marriage. So maybe before marriage, your mother said, your father said, I don't really like that person. Find somebody else. It doesn't fit this. You may listen to them. But after marriage, you're already married, they come and say divorce. Why? Personal reasons? No. Worldly reasons? No. Religious reason? Then you have to listen. Okay? Because with religious reasons, you're listening to two. Allah Azza wa Jal, and then your parents. But with worldly reasons that can bring you harm, which is divorce, you're not obligated to listen to them. And that's by the way, the response of Ahmad ibn Hanbal, rahimahullah, that somebody came to him and he said that my father is asking that I divorce my wife. Should I listen to him? He says, if your father is like Umar, listen to him. Really straight, clear answer. If your father is like Umar, listen to him. So if a person is acting in that capacity, then you definitely listen to him, right? So this is kind of the point that I made and kind of repeat here. It's always possible that you could lose the person or the thing that you love. Either they die or they stop loving you, etc., etc. So how do you cope with loss of love? Right? As hard as it is. A child dies, right? And that could be the most loved, beloved being in your life, they die. How do you cope with that? You won't be able to do unless you rely on Allah's love. Rely on belief in Allah Azza wa Jal. Trust in His promise. So the love of Allah Azza wa Jal can compensate and make up for any loss. And that will enable you to continue. If you don't have Allah's love, then you'll be tested with worldly love. You'll get it and you will lose it. It will make you sad. It will make you worried. It will devastate you. It will torment you. Every love is tormenting. And that's the statement of Ibn al-Qayyim, rahimahullah, among others. Every love besides the love of Allah Azza wa Jalla is tormenting. Do you know why? Before you get it, when you get it, it's tormenting. Before you get it, you long for it. I want it. I can't live without it. That torments you, that it's not there. But you say, okay, when I have it, what's tormenting? What is torturing about having a love that is in your hand? You could lose it. The fear of losing it. The fear of others coming and taking it from you. The fear of that thing stopping to love you. Right? All these are possibilities. So you're always tormented by it. What decreases or eliminates that torment is the love of Allah Azza wa Jalla. If you lose it, Allah is the best of compensation. Right? So this is what I have, inshallah, for today. And I hope that you found it beneficial, inshallah, and you allow it kind of to sink in, bi'idhnillah Azza wa Jalla. Let me know, inshallah, if you have any questions, inshallah. And I have one from last week, but I'll just give you some time, inshallah, to go through it. So let me read this, inshallah. It was from last week. Is living with a person who abandons salah and fulfills his duties as a Muslim, getting to affect the rest of the practicing members of the family? The person says that he hates the religion and is evil and makes the rest of the family uncomfortable. Now, of course, this is a complicated question. So the person doesn't pray, he hates religion and all of that. You would probably need to ask an imam, like in person probably, just to elaborate on the relationship of that person to you and to the rest of the family. Do they support the family? Do they have to stay with you? Are you bonded to them or are you not? Because the answer is going to depend on all of this, right? Are you married to them or is it somebody else? Is it a parent? Is it a child? And what you need to do with them. Always advice and dua is recommended when you are faced with somebody like that. But it's otherwise, beyond that, it gets complicated, inshallah. So I just wanted to note that, since we received that question, and say, visit a sheikh, visit an imam, or even just write to one, but just explain in detail who that person is and what are the options. And inshallah, you'll receive a beneficial answer, a satisfactory answer. How to reach the middle ground of love, not to love very intensely and not too lightly. If you have the love of Allah Azza wa Jal with you, that is the best moderator, that is the best regulator. Because your love is not going to run to an extreme. It's always going to be guided and it's always going to be restricted by, oh, I cannot do this, this is haram. I cannot feel that, this is wrong. So the love of Allah Azza wa Jal will prevent you from reaching an extreme. And it will also enhance your love. But remember all the talks before that we said that loving Allah Azza wa Jal and loving for the sake of Allah Azza wa Jal enhances love, right? So when you look at that person and you see them as servants of Allah who are deserving of His love and Allah loves them and Allah guides them and Allah sustains them. When you look at that person, as the hadith of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam said, that a believing man does not hate a believing woman. If he hates something about her, he's satisfied with something else. That is the balance that Islam teaches you, that the Prophet ﷺ teaches you. He says, yes, لا يفرق مؤمن مؤمنا. A believing man is not going to hate a believing woman. He says, why? Because if you look at something in her that you hate, you dislike, you don't fail to see that she has other points that are good as well. So that moderation, that balance in look, who teaches this? The Prophet ﷺ. So when you hear that from him, you'll take a second look at the person that you think you hate and you can't live next to. And you'll find that they have some good things in them, at least a potential. And you could work on that potential. So what will help you? The help you is religious love. Love that is grounded in religion will always be in Allah Azza wa Jalla. If religion is understood right and practiced right, will lead you to that moderate path. Wallahu a'lam. And let me know, inshallah, if the, what I answer does not address everything you had in mind. Send follow-up questions, inshallah. It says, life happens and sometimes you do end up disliking people. So how do we stop? Also, can you speak about this topic in terms of your children? Thank you. Meaning you're hating your children? Okay, so life happens and sometimes you end up disliking people. That happens, and that is because of worldly reasons, right? So you just, first of all, if we're talking about Muslims, let's say, first of all, make sure that that hatred is only worldly, not religious. So that is a moderating influence. So you're like, I don't hate them so much that I wish them to be in hellfire. That's unjust. So I hate them because they did this and that to me. So there's some hatred, some friction. If you remember that you still owe them, you have responsibilities towards them as believers, then you're not going to hate them to an extreme. Right? I still have to give them salam or answer their salam. I still cannot cross the line when it comes to their rights. So that's a moderating influence. But even when it comes to non-Muslims, you still owe them few rights. You cannot just go on, you know, just because he's non-Muslim, punch everybody you see in the street because they're Muslim. No, you owe them certain things, respect and honor, right? So that moderates your reactions, moderates your emotions. So life happens, but you pull yourself back and say, I shouldn't hate to an extreme because that is wrong. And then you could think about it also in terms of, this is only dunya, this is only worldly objectives, worldly objects, and they come and they go. And you don't see, and that kind of is a elevated observation, elevated and inherited from the scholars, is that you see Allah Azza wa Jal behind anything that is happening to you. So you stop faulting and blaming people for the things that they have done. Right? Allah was behind it. Allah allowed it to happen. And there's a message in it for you. So you don't concentrate your hate on this person. Oh, he did this and he did that. But rather you go back and you say, it's only my sins that had made this possible. So you go back and you fix yourself and you focus less on why that person has done this or did not do that. But that is kind of an advanced stage. But at least you do what? You notice that they have another side and you still have to relate to them with justice as Muslim or as even non-Muslim. When our emotions overtake us due to an incident, which we know that Allah loves certain decisions and we would like to follow. However, how do we overcome this overwhelming emotion which prevents us from making right decisions when we are unstable? If you are overwhelmed by your emotions, you have to take a few steps back or at least restrict the external manifestations of those emotions. So you're angry. So just with anger, if you are really angry, really, really, really angry, what do? Say whatever and do whatever? So those are emotions that you have. That's a reaction. You can't stop it. I mean, that the emotional reaction, okay? But you restrain your mouth from saying what you want to say and your body from doing what it wants to do. So you don't talk, you don't speak, you sit down, you make wudu, you leave the room, you do other things. So you control your emotions. And that comes with practice and comes with dua and comes again with religious devotion. With you have greater iman. You've had that awareness, oh, I shouldn't be this angry, I shouldn't be this agitated. Allah Azza wa Jal is watching what I'm doing. This comes from religious proximity, closeness to Allah Azza wa Jal. So if that's the case, you'll be able to control those emotions at that moment. And if you're able to pull back and they subside, you could revisit your reaction and revisit how, what do you want to do with it, and ask yourself, okay, I want to do A, B, and C. I feel like doing that. Is this pleasing to Allah Azza wa Jal? If yes, proceed. If not, stop. Is this according to the Sunnah? Yes or no? Will this be helpful? That's an important question. It's not just I'm angry and I need to express my anger. Is this helpful? Will this help you? And if it's not going to help you, then don't do it. And it's going to help them. And if it's not, don't do it. So the more that you pull back and question that emotion and question the reaction, then you'll be most likely, inshallah, to overcome it. So just restraint. And it does come, inshallah, with practice, right? How can we relate the year of sorrow of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam with the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? So the year of sorrow, or Aam al-Huzn, that is a later description. That is a later description of that year. And it wasn't called that at the time of Muhammad alayhi salatu wa sallam, that he was so sorry or so sad that they called the whole year the year of sorrow. So it wasn't like that. Not that he didn't feel the sorrow of losing his uncle and losing his wife, radiallahu anha. But it wasn't called the year of sorrow when the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam was alive. At the same time, sorrow is a human emotion. Like he was sorry, he was sad alayhi salatu wasalam for losing his son, right? So it doesn't conflict with the love of Allah Azza wa Jal. It's the love of Allah that helps you cope and overcome. So you will have a natural emotion, natural reaction, and then the love of Allah Azza wa Jal comes and makes it easier. Right? I think that, Allahu A'lam. Can we ask a divorce from a husband who is not praying or still drinking alcohol despite being advised? What are the steps needing according to the hadith and sunnah? These are major sins, at least. And he's not praying or drinking alcohol, and he is habitually a drinker of alcohol. These are major sins. And I'm talking here in general. In general, you have a right to ask for a divorce if a person is committing those major sins. It's best, inshallah, that you talk to someone in person so that they would know the extent of those mistakes, if there's a possibility of fixing that man or not, and if not, to give you the steps, inshallah, for seeking that divorce. And it's going to depend a lot on where you stay, inshallah. What is the ruling on watching Islamic series like Umar ibn al-Khattab when actors portray the Sahabas like Bilal, but they don't show the faces of the Prophet or the Khalifas? I remember, very early on when the movie Al-Risala came on. Remember the message, Al-Risala? That there were fatwas from the scholars that prohibited from actors from portraying the Sahaba. So portraying Umar radiallahu anhu or Bilal or any of those major senior Sahabas should be prohibited because it demeans them. Because that actor, that was the argument then, that the actor who's portraying these Sahabas is an actor who will betray other characters in other movies and series, and that does not befit the respect that should be reserved for Umar radiallahu anhu, because maybe for us as adults we will not have that, but for children they will always associate Umar with that actor, right? And Bilal with that actor, and they will see, this is Bilal, this is Umar, this is, and so they will follow him. They will follow them, right? Through other movies, other series. So it's disrespectful, right? Wallahu a'lam. Should the fear of Allah Azza wa Jal be out of love or punishment or both? It can be both. So you fear Allah Azza wa Jal because you're afraid that He will punish you for your sins. And you could fear Allah Azza wa Jal because you could lose His love, right? So it's a privilege that you're losing, so you don't want to lose it. So you fear Allah Azza wa Jal, and then you also fear Him because you could be punished because of the sins that you committed. Okay. What should a woman have to say if she's the one asking if someone is interested in getting married? There is no special formula or words, right? She either sends news of it, or she asks directly, are you interested in getting married? And that would be it, inshallah. There are no specifics phrasing. Whatever way would be culturally appropriate, right? I'm looking to marry a good man. Do you know someone? That is an indirect way, right? I'm looking to marry a good man. I know that you know a lot of brothers and da-da-da. Do you know someone, right? And then just see how that conversation proceeds, inshallah. Or you could kind of send somebody, a mediator, to say, so-and-so, there's a sister interested in marrying you, and make it vague. She's of this age, of this ethnicity. Are you interested? If yes, then they could proceed with more information. So this way, kind of, you can stay veiled. So if there is a no, it doesn't affect you, right? So that's another way. Wallahu a'lam. Like, I don't have the best answer here, but I think that should suffice, inshallah. Not hating, but loving your children so much. How do you moderate the fact that you could love your children so much? You probably will love your children probably the most among anyone who's around you. But you've seen on the news, right? You've seen it repeatedly, like it's daily, people losing their children, right? So you say to yourself, how are they managing this? How are they dealing with that? I mean, and this is, you're seeing your child dying in front of your eyes, like you cannot save them. And they could be easily saved, but you cannot see them, or they're starving to death, right? There's no food, they're starving to death. So what do? So you know that they cannot, that child cannot be the one and only love in their life, meaning if they die, I must die as well. Or I will lose my faith. That's a problem. I'll lose my faith if I lose them. So what do? You say to yourself, do I love them more than Allah Azza wa Jal? And then you ask yourself, as difficult as that question may be, what if so-and-so dies? Because that's a possibility, right? What if I lose them? Then you see how you react to it. Not, I will go crazy, I'll kill myself. No, what would I do? Will I say, إِنَّ لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّ إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ? Will I remember that Allah Azza wa Jal will keep them safe, especially if they die very young, keep them safe and they will enter Jannah? So you get yourself mentally ready if such a thing happens. And lean on the love of Allah Azza wa Jal. Like, read more Quran, make a lot of dua, increase the love of Allah so it can displace some of the love that you have for your children that could be excessive. So you love him a lot, you love him enough, but not excessively. So when you love Allah Azza wa Jalla enough, so I would say increase Allah's love so that it could displace any excessive or extreme love that you could have for any human being, right? So what is a good recommended timeline between getting to know each other and getting married and everything in between? I don't think, again, there is a standard, like, know him for 2 weeks or 1 month or 1 year and then get married after. There is no really timeline. It all depends on you, them, and the circumstances. You could meet someone once, have a conversation, you find everything is fine, you plan a wedding in 2 weeks or a month, and that'd be it, and you could live, alhamdulillah, with a lot of happiness. And you could know someone for a year or years, and you get married and you get divorced in a year or two. So there is no real timeline. It all depends on when you meet, when you sit and you talk, do you find compatibility or not? Do you both like the same things and want the same things? Do your personalities agree or not? If everything is fine, all your questions are answered, nothing is left uncovered, then why wait? Right? Why wait? If you need more time to investigate and ask questions and you're still not comfortable, then take the time that you need to do this. At the same time, if it's an engagement, I don't recommend that you prolong the engagement. Because the engagement is a half commitment, right? I'm sort of in, but not fully in. I'm attached, but not really attached. So no, you have to really make up your mind. Because the longer it stays, the more that she gets attached to you or he gets attached to you. And that's really not fair. If you know what you want and you're ready, she has everything you want, he has everything that you want, or maybe not everything, but 80% of it, 75% of it, whatever, right? But you're comfortable with that, That's it, proceed. And he said, but what, maybe what, I'll find out things later and I'm anxious and I'm not ready. But we always leap. And we understand that there is always an unknown. You take a job and you don't know if it's going to last or not. You study something, you don't know if you're going to be good at it or not. You travel to a new country, you don't know if you're going to like it or not. There's always an unknown. But you pray istikhara, you do your job, you investigate, and once that is done, you proceed with Allah Azza wa Jalla, right? So, no specific timeline. Allahu a'lam. And I think I did answer everything. Okay, I think I did. Okay, inshallah. So anything has, anyone has any anything else? اللي هو هذا اللي فسرناه وهذا اللي فسرناه اللي هو انت رحت ورجعت يعني اكش ان شاء الله. I mean, I'll read it again for you, which is هو احبب حبيبك هونا ما عسى ان يكون بغيضك يوما ما وابغض بغيضك هونا ما عسى ان يكون حبيبك يوما ما. يعني اذا احببت احبب بغير تطرف في الحب, لانه قد ينقلب هذا الحب الى بغض بغير مبالغة في الحب, بغير مبالغة في الحب, يعني هونا ما, يعني تريث تمهل في هذا الحب. ومثله أبغض بغيضك هونا ما بغير مبالغة في البغض, لأنه هذا الذي تبغض الآن قد ينقلب فيصبح صديقك أو حبيبك فيما بعد. فهذا هو. بارك إن شاء الله. Okay. طيب إن شاء الله. So we'll stop إن شاء الله here بإذن الله عز وجل. We'll see you next week بإذن الله. سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك, أشهد أن لا إله إلا أنت, استغفرك وأتوب إليك.